Hello, boys and ghouls, and welcome to our Halloween episode. That time of year when stores are overrun by creepy spiders, candy in bags, cardboard coffins, kids' costumes, motion-activated skeletons, and pumpkin-flavored everything. Join us as we discuss the billion-dollar business of Halloween. From facts and figures to a few of our favorite things to find on the shelves. So, grab a cart. Shop till you drop. Will that be cash or charge? Because you're going to pay as we deliver Boys and Ghouls episode 89, all about Halloween stuff.
You want to see something really scary?
They come from the bowels of hell, a transformed race of walking dead.
Zombies, exploding heads.
Psychos, fanatics, murderers, nutcases.
Now, do we all agree that what we are dealing with is vampires?
I know that one of you is a werewolf.
Ain't nothing but dead folks.
I want to kill
the undead.
Surround.
You ever talk to a corpse?
Satan is our pal.
It's boring.
Throw the third switch!
Look! The third switch!
Give my creation!
So I heard clicking when you unlocked it.
Ooh.
Like when I heard you go click, 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 I was like, oh my God, if I left my phone not on silent this whole time, we would have been interrupted like 27,000 times. I get so many texts all day.
Well, you're here. So who's going to text me?
An excellent point.
Okay. I'm going to move in and, get.
Oh, Marshall. Hello.
As Halloween approaches, Halloween-y things have been starting up, and they start up early here in Los Angeles. What have you been up to?
Well, today, as a matter of fact, I did something pretty cool, which you already know about. I'm pretending like this is a surprise to you. But, you know, I'm an annual pass holder at Universal Studios Hollywood. Yeah. As part of that, they will sometimes offer special events to annual pass holders. One of them really appealed to me, which was a lights-on walkthrough of the Stranger Things maze, but I had already been through the haunted house with you.
Yeah, yeah.
With all the lights and everything.
When you say all the lights and everything, you mean all the lights off.
Yes, sorry. Yes, I said that in a weird way.
And,
I meant
the theatrical
all the
lighting.
Effects, actors, theatrical lighting, everything.
Sound.
So what was interesting about this walkthrough, I don't know what I expected, but they did have sound going. And some of the lighting. However, I would say the house lights in the soundstage were up. So the Stranger Things 4 maze, along with the Exorcist Believer maze, they've been doing this the last several years. They're putting a couple of mazes inside a soundstage on the lower lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had the lights on in the soundstage. However, though there were no scare actors in the haunted house, there still were ambient sounds. There was still the soundtrack.
Oh,
they put the soundtrack on, or the, you know, what I'm
like
calling
reduced
the
volume.
Yeah, it was definitely reduced volume.
Look, I know it's not like you took a poll while you were there, but how much of it was haunt aficionados versus people maybe with sensory sensitivity who want to check it out, but without getting, you know.
Well, I thought about that.
Yeah.
Because personally, a tiny tangent, I'm sure I've talked about this on the podcast before, like 10 years ago, but I used to be a bit of a scaredy cat, a big scaredy cat when it came to haunted houses. A part of my journey towards becoming brave enough to do it is when I worked at Universal, I was going to my job at the Terminator show, and I don't know if this guy was security or he was hanging out outside the House of a Thousand Corpses maze, which was behind that show building. This was daytime. I was like, oh, wow. And he said, do you want to walk through and see it, you know, during the daytime? And I was like, yeah, because otherwise you would not have been able to force me in there. I was too scared.
Did you guys have a rapport, or he was just like,
I didn't know the guy.
Hey there, young lady.
Yeah.
Step right up.
He could have murdered me in there, but he seemed harmless. And
here you are, unmurdered and now a fan of walkthroughs.
Yeah. Well, it didn't happen overnight, but that helped me. So I bring that up to say, There were some people walking through with kids, like small kids.
Sure.
Definitely way too small. Although, I mean, you see small kids at horror nights. But part of me wondered, like, was that part of it for them? I will say the two girls behind me in line, right as we got inside the soundstage and, like, we were about to walk through, they were hyping themselves up.
Like,
verbally. They were like
girding themselves.
Yeah. They were like,
raising their courage.
It's going to be fine. We can, yes, it's fine. There's not even anybody in there. It's fine.
And I'm guessing they're big Stranger Things fans.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, there were definitely people. There was a mix of people.
Like, this is their opportunity because
Under
normal conditions.
I think there's probably a mix of people. Like, some people who were like, cool, I'm a pass holder. Probably some scaredy cats like I used to be. Probably some people who are just huge Stranger Things fans who want to see as much as possible. There were definitely some, like, vloggers, people there, like, documenting it, although they didn't let us film inside. So it was an interesting smattering of people, but a lot of people wearing Stranger Things merch. And okay. A lot of people wearing general horror tees. But it was really cool. There were a few things that I was like, oh, wow. You know, for example, there's a room where there's a sort of a facade for a building that I hadn't clocked when you and I went through it, that this facade was, like, not 3D.
Okay.
In other words,
is
like...
it, like, painted on the wall?
Yes. So a lot of facades in these haunted houses will have at least some element of, like, three dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Even inside the houses, it just depends. But this one, I just hadn't noticed it because of the theatrical lighting when we went through. Also, when you're
dodging characters.
Totally. You can't really be present and look around at all the immersion. It's why they're so repeatable, a lot of these haunted houses. But I did find myself able to really take a lot more in. Although I will say that some of the areas, because of the way that they're like shrouded in fabrics or blocked off by doorways that have like those big fat rubber things,
mm-hmm.
that there still were some darker areas. So it wasn't like, it wasn't bright. And I still found my body like prepare, because I know how they orchestrate these scares, meaning there's usually a, like, if there's a distraction on your left, someone's going to come out of the corner on the right. You know what I mean? I know like some of the formulas. And so inherently, I was on guard for somebody to pop out, and of course no one ever did. But it was interesting to be able to see just a little more clearly the design of, like, why there's a wall over here, why there's an opening over here. And of course there were some openings that, you know, actors would come through that you don't see as well when all the lights are off, so they can catch you. But with the lights more on, you could go like, oh yeah, someone would come from there and then someone would come from there.
And there's just details I would think you'd like to appreciate.
But totally.
In the moment, you're like, ah, scary. Ah, move on. There's people behind me. There's people in front of me. I got to keep going.
Yeah. It was a really cool experience and I'm glad I did it. I'm glad they're offering things like this.
Yeah, this feels like a relatively new thing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a really unique opportunity that's different from like a meet and greet with a special character, which is also very cool for people, but
sure.
Yeah.
Now you and I got a little special treatment when
we went
through the mazes.
Mm-hmm.
It was my first time as an RIP, which is a VIP, but
yeah,
you know, rest in peace.
Yep.
And now that you and I have both had that experience, we got taken around, we had our own guide. We were in a group of 12 people. We got, like, one other, I mean, we got to the front of the line to pose with Norman Bates,
mm-hmm.
but that wasn't, like, exclusive to us. That was anybody can do it. We just got front of the line. RIP. Check it out. We did have a black phone meet and greet photo opportunity.
Yeah.
With a guy dressed like the character from Black Phone.
The grabber.
Mm-hmm. But I gotta say, in this experience, like, we hit the mazes, like, boom, boom, boom. One would finish and we'd just, like, be into the next one pretty fast. And we had none of that, like, decompression time in between them.
You even asked me at one point, because you know that I have on occasion, including almost this experience you and I had, but on a previous occasion, I ducked out of a maze once because of the just overwhelm and some personal stuff. So I think you know that, like, I have a tendency to sort of need an escape hatch occasionally. And I think those refractory periods between of, like, your heart rate coming down and being able to talk about it and debrief are kind of important. And at one point you turned to me and you were like, hey, how you doing with this going straight from maze to maze thing?
This
you doing
pace.
Okay? Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't be like, you know, I just really miss the lines. I don't want to really put that out there because it was a pretty sweet opportunity.
Yeah.
But
maybe a 10-minute line, you know, a short line. Build the anticipation.
To talk about, like, oh, did you notice that thing in that maze? And say what you really liked or that you appreciated.
Yeah.
Instead, it was just, like, all built. And then when it was all over, it was like, Okay, let's talk about the last several mazes we went on.
Totally.
Because isn't part of the greatest part of a haunt the hang?
Pretty nice.
Kat, you're an RIP with me.
Always. And you, I.
Excellent. Happy Halloween, Kat.
It's here, and not a moment too soon.
The topic that we're going to cover for our Halloween episode 2023 was your idea.
It was.
And the title is my idea. Mm-hmm. I'm calling this one Halloween Stuff, but you texted me and said, how about we do Halloween products?
No.
No?
I said, I think you got really focused on the products, but I'm going to steer us into a little bit of a broader lens, because what I said to you was Halloween as an industry. So not just products, although yes, obviously we'll talk a lot about that, but I'm interested in the industry as a whole. Essentially, the idea of Halloween as not just an event, but something that has become every single year an industry that grows and grows and grows. And it's
that's true. And sometimes I wonder how much of that's just me living in LA. I'm getting like a skewed look at it. And how much of it is like, no, it's grown, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are numbers. There are people at colleges, at universities who study things like this. Like, there are numbers indicating it is not just a Southern California thing. Although I think you can make a pretty good argument that we're the epicenter for a lot of things, like especially professional haunts. I mean, yes, Horror Nights in Orlando is massive. It's bigger than ours, but we have some pretty big theme parks that all have that stuff.
Definitely corporate haunts.
Yeah.
We've got that down.
Sure.
Okay. So this Halloween, just cold hard facts about commerce.
And it really tickled me, and I think I might have written it down, and I'll never find it in my notes. No, here it is. You texted me back saying that you loved the idea.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to put words in your mouth. Maybe you just liked it.
Well, we've got a paper trail.
You said, we just have to frame it without cynicism for money making. And I said, I can't promise not to make at least one joke about capitalism. This is what we do, Marshall. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It's just the kind of thing where when people are passionate about something and enjoy something, somebody's going to find a way to make money off of it, you know?
Sure.
And they should, like, at least on a smaller level. When you get into, like, the bigger corporations and, you know, later I'm sure we'll talk about Target.
Check your itinerary. I put Target in there.
Yeah.
There's something I didn't quite know where to put, and I guess I'll just put it here at the top. People have a real love for corporate things as well. Like, as much as I love a neighbor making candied apples, I'm also among the people who enjoy when my favorite intellectual properties come out with something. And a lot for nostalgia reasons, you know?
Yeah.
I don't chase new things as much as I would chase, like, oh, this was around when I was a kid, and now they've given it a hat.
Yeah.
I'll buy three.
Right.
Although, last Halloween, they brought back the McDonald's Boo Buckets.
Right.
And I'm not saying McDonald's is the biggest corporate entity out there, but it is certainly the one pointed to whenever someone has to make capitalism art. There's always like a Ronald McDonald or like some arches, but you know, they'll give them like a bloody knife or something.
It's arguably the most American company.
Yeah.
And isn't it interesting that if you listen to our brief history of Halloween episode, we talk about how Halloween is a uniquely American holiday, that obviously it didn't necessarily start here.
Yeah.
And it's an amalgam of different traditions from other countries. However, it has become a uniquely American holiday that we kind of claim. And so isn't it interesting that I feel like the Boo Buckets and the McNugget Halloween characters are, you know, so probably if you polled, you know, if you just grabbed 20 people walking down the street and asked them, like, what's a Halloween toy or something that they remember, probably most of them are going to say the Boo Buckets. So I think it's interesting that McDonald's, this like the American company, found this synergy with the American holiday. And it's like the nexus of Halloween products. Are those Boo Buckets?
Although, the Boo Buckets were a big thing because they could be brought back without any updating. Like, how do you improve the paperclip? How do you improve a plastic bucket?
Yeah.
We both have, for this episode, getting into the blogger and vlogger, Dinosaur Dracula. And he pointed out that McDonald's would always be a sponsor of children's holiday specials as they aired.
Sure.
At the time during which specials were the most special because they'd only be once a year.
Garfield's Halloween Adventure, sponsored by McDonald's.
There would always be McDonald's ads in them, in the Christmas ones and in the Halloween ones. So they're really in my brain as far as being a part of Halloween.
Scared Silly, starring Ronald McDonald and the Chicken McNuggets.
Ronald!
In any case, the Boo Buckets. I may or may not have had Boo Buckets. I think my sister got them, and then they just became a family thing. Then they just became something in the basement for my dad to, like, keep basement
nails
things in.
Nails in,
yeah, for example.
Sure.
And then it was like, hey, Boo Buckets are back. So I was like, oh, great. Yeah, I remember those. I've got nice, warm feelings about those. I'm going to try to wrangle them up. And so I went to a McDonald's, and I asked for the Boo Buckets. And they were all out because this...
This was when?
Last Halloween.
Okay.
But there was a guy, like, my age, standing there. And he's like, hey, man. And I look at him, and, like, I'm wearing a Ghostbusters shirt, like a T-shirt. And he's wearing one that's, like, a button-down. With, like, Slimers all over it. I was like, oh, hey. And he goes, if you go to the McDonald's by the airport, you can get a witch bucket. And I saw, like, so much of myself in this guy who's been, like, running around town trying to find Boo Buckets that I was just like, oh, thanks. But in my head, I was just like, I don't want them anymore.
Oh, boy.
I don't want to, I don't want to drive all over town to reclaim a part of my past that was nice but non-essential.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Now you can collect one of three different pumpkins with the purchase of every McDonald's Halloween Pumpkin Happy Meal. What you put in them is up to you.
Can I share a couple of punny headlines I came across when I was researching Halloween as an industry?
Please.
Boolish on profits. how Halloween is big business. This is from a local news outlet in Orlando. And another one, consumers declare code orange for Halloween. That was a line in the article, but the article was entitled, Thanks to Disney Magic, Halloween now starts 11 weeks early. And a lot of these articles are talking about how some people get pretty frustrated at how far back we're starting these things. I know that I've heard that conversation a lot more in the last couple years of like, the pumpkin spice latte this early, but Starbucks keeps ratcheting back when they launch it each year. Capitalism, man.
Happy 20-year anniversary, cat who drinks pumpkin spice lattes. And to all of us, because that really kicked off the trend.
Yeah.
If you've liked a pumpkin spice anything, happy 20 years of that being like a thing.
Pumpkin's back.
Pumpkin is back at Dunkin' Donuts. Enjoy all your pumpkin-y favorites like the new pumpkin creme brulee latte.
For a limited time, the brand new McCafe pumpkin spice latte. Made with 100% Rainforest Alliance certified espresso. So add some delicious coffee-made pumpkin spice to your favorite time of the year.
Marshall.
Mmm.
If I may, I would like to share with you some numbers, some facts and figures that I've culled from the internet.
People are tuning in for the numbers.
I know. That's just the kind of podcast we are. We're not about fun. We're about facts and figures. So according to Investopedia, Halloween is the second biggest retail holiday in the U.S. behind only Christmas. So I'm going to tell you how big Christmas spending is annually, or at least as of, I think, 2021, 2022. So Christmas spending as of 2021, $700 billion a year, but that includes travel. So that's not just retail. That's just Christmas as an industry, which includes travel. You're not going to come close to that for Halloween. People don't travel for Halloween. I mean, sometimes they do. I am traveling for the Halloween season this year.
Go to the good neighborhoods.
That's true. But listen to how much smaller Halloween is, even though, I mean, Halloween, people are manic about it, right? Okay. We love Halloween. The Halloween industry is up to around $11 billion as of 2022, with Christmas at $700 billion. So,
okay.
Still a pretty big difference. Still a wide gap to close. I don't think it'll ever get there. However, it is going up. I think a few years before that, Halloween was at like $9 billion a year. Now it's up to $11 billion. So I think it is, you know, it's obviously still growing.
This Halloween, remember Magic Manor. Wigs, masks, makeup, costumes.
Scary sound-activated Halloween figures, battery-operated pirate skull, witches, skeletons, and more.
Hershey bars, Mr. Good Bar, Kit Kats, Rulos, Whatchamacallits, Reese's.
2021 marked the first time that average spending on Halloween had moved above $100 per consumer who spent on it. So, of the people who spend money on Halloween, now as of 2021, everybody spends an average of $100. So, costumes, candy, whatever it is you're spending, average. There was a prediction that in 2022, consumers would spend $3.6 billion on costumes, $3.1 billion on candy, $3.4 billion on decorations, and $600 million on greeting cards.
Oh.
According to national surveys, 47% of people will wear a costume or part of a costume, and a surprising 17% of people intend to buy a costume for their pets. I don't think that surprises me. That was just how it was written.
That number feels like it's on the rise.
Yeah. Definitely. And then I just kind of wanted to, I know I already said this, but shed a little light on the fact that we're not just talking about buying goods, that Halloween as an industry creates temporary jobs at haunted houses, short-term retail shops, transportation of goods for sale. So this is what we're talking about when we talk about the industry. It's not just like...
It's not all going to the pockets of the fat cats.
Right. Well, it might be. But my point is that when it comes to all of the money involved in the industry... It's not just, I give you $5, you give me a bag of candy. It's like there's also a ton of jobs created seasonally. There's a ton of like, okay, there's extra trucks that have to go out. There's just more work around the industry.
Before moving to Los Angeles, I wanted to make a little extra money. So I got a second job at a Halloween store.
Totally. Yeah. And I also think about things like media, like programming that gets created. The jobs of people writing and producing things like the History Channel's Haunted History of Halloween, those little specials they do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it kind of boggles the mind to think about just how much extra work and effort goes into Halloween beyond just like, I bought a costume and I wore it.
We got a bushel of apples. Let's have the kids over.
Simpler times.
Carving your own Halloween pumpkin can be a lot of fun for grown-ups.
Hey kids, isn't this fun?
But with a pumpkin cutter, children of all ages can easily design and carve their own Halloween pumpkins in complete safety.
It's the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown is sponsored by your neighborhood McDonald's restaurant.
For a really great Halloween, pick up tons of Pepsi and Doritos.
Kat.
Yes.
I've been thinking about true American art forms, like jazz. I can't prove it because I haven't researched it very well. But I would think that a pioneered American art form is the stacking of different colored soda boxes in the grocery store to form some other picture.
Uh-huh.
It's just my belief that other countries wouldn't bother with this, but, you know.
Someone who's listening must have some data on this, if anecdotal. Have you been to a market in, you know, Croatia and seen... different colored soda cans stacked to make the boxes that they come in,
like
making
the
a ghost shape or whatever.
Yeah.
Jack-o'-lantern.
I can't remember like when I first saw one, it was probably like a snowman or something, but they just keep getting more elaborate.
Sure. I didn't think about that.
And just to re-describe it in case I didn't like make myself clear, you know, someone's from another country and is like, you do what now? In our supermarkets, the soda boxes are all the same shape as each other, even though they're different brands, and they're all different colors. So they will get stacked in such a way they sort of resemble like an 8-bit video game pixels in which Christmas-type pictures might be made. Or like football for like football season.
Yeah, definitely seen that.
Or jack-o'-lanterns for the Halloween season. I just found one pretty easily on the internet. And a thought occurred to me that... orange is an essential, you know, if you're going to make something Halloween, you better have some orange.
Yeah.
But most orange-colored drink boxes, like Sunkist, tend to be sort of marketed like summertime drinks.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So this one is, look at that, like scary pumpkin.
Wow.
And that's got to be like 12, 15
Holy
feet high.
Holy crap.
The ghost is probably Fresca. I couldn't really see. I tried to zoom in.
Oh, it looks like Diet Dr. Pepper.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
I think.
But the orange is Orange Fanta.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is less marketed for summertime than Sunkist, which is, I'd say, the leading orange boxed soda.
Of course, the stem of the jack-o'-lantern is Sprite.
Green Sprite.
Yeah. That is real. I've never seen one this good in the wild.
No. Personally. Nor I.
Yeah.
What is that, like the cherry Dr. Pepper, perhaps, in the back? Those tend to be
right.
Black.
Yeah, yeah.
Black with, like,
I couldn't tell,
red
but I'll bet you're right. That's really cool. You should post that on our socials.
Sure.
Just so that people can see if they are like, what are they talking about? Because it's a weird thing to try to describe.
Hi, kids. Casper the Friendly Ghost here for Target. This is the place for Halloween.
Target has everything for Halloween experts, from bags of Mars Fun Size candy bars to these Disney Halloween videos for just $9.99 each.
Including decorations that can turn any house into a haunted house and a frighteningly large selection of candy. Target, your first stop for Halloween.
Speaking of store displays, you sent me a video about Target displays through the years.
It blew my mind. I don't know how I found it.
Is it part just because, like, you always see them, but you never really notice them on, like, what are they doing this year? But once you put them side by side, they all have their own, like, visual through line.
I'm going to disagree with you a little just because Target's Halloween display has absolutely been something. Maybe I haven't necessarily tracked what the theme was year over year and gone, oh, they did something very different with their display this year. But what I will say is I remember there being a time in my life before which Target was an absolute destination and that Target Halloween section was a destination, and a time period after which. Like, I remember coming online in my brain and being like, oh my God, Target is like doing a whole Halloween thing.
It's the Halloween headquarters.
Yes. When I was like little, like that wasn't a thing, but I feel like about 20 years ago, wasn't that sort of where that video started chronicling? It was like the early 2000s, right?
Yeah, that's when that one picked up.
I remember
So they don't just like most people, just pull the Halloween decorations out of the garage, dust them off and put them up and go, hey, everybody, it's Halloween time. This is like a big effort that I believe starts a year, like right now, next year's.
Absolutely.
Is already being worked on.
Yeah.
And part of the way I came to that conclusion was because in this video you sent, 2010's theme was a very pared down theme that, Trick or Treat on the Cheap is what it was called. And it really stressed spooktastic savings. It was all about the money you could save. And it's like, okay, but didn't the ass fall out of the economy in like fall of 2008?
Yeah.
So like September 2008 is what kind of gets pointed to as like, well, that's the big turning point.
Yeah.
That's far too late to change anything in a Target.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're already up. But even the following years, 2009, didn't reflect savings and being a thrifty shopper.
Going on for long enough by the time they were planning for 2010 that they were like, we got to incorporate the acknowledgement and the fact that like people are not going to be able to spend as much money.
Yeah, it took until 2010 to react to something that happened in 2008 because of how big this is and how much planning goes in advance.
Yeah.
They couldn't just throw on the brakes and go another direction.
Right.
Also, like in 2020, I remember saying on our podcast, if you go into the Target, you'd think everything was just business as usual.
Yeah.
And it's like, sure, because all that stuff had been, you know, getting created in 2019.
Yeah.
So there was no, like, I don't know what they would have done for a pandemic at Halloween, but they certainly weren't doing it. It was just...
They probably would have somehow acknowledged it. I don't know.
They just went ahead with what they had, which was a circus theme.
Really?
Yeah. A Halloween circus, which I think is great.
Yeah.
I love just the very notion of a dark circus.
I know you do.
In an autumnal circus.
It's very Mr. Dark. Is that his name?
Yeah.
From Something Wicked?
From Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Yeah. I have a very visceral memory of the moment of like walking into Target one of these years in the last 20 years earlier on and seeing kind of their first real impactful line of cool, like, oh, it's a phone that you pick up and it says a thing, and oh, this is a crystal ball that has like a weird hologram in it, or this is a black cat that makes a sound. I really remember the before that and then the year where I walked into a Target and I was like, I want to spend some time in this section, which was so special as a fan of Halloween stuff. It was like, It just felt important. And now that I, you know, watched this YouTube video that you and I watched, I really appreciate it even more that looking at the years one after the other, as this creator kind of outlined them, you saw how kind of bespoke and like creative the different years were. Even so far as there was a year where they had this like Japanese character with like Domo or something.
Yeah.
It was like a little mascot and you could buy this character and his little friends. And I love it. I love that they swung for the fences. They were like, this is it. This year we're going all in on Domo.
I remember the year that Halloween was on a weekend. And you'd go in and it was like
Halloweekend.
Halloweekend.
That's right.
Don't just buy like regular Halloween stuff. You're going to have to make it through the whole Halloweekend. And we're here to sell you a bunch of stuff to do that with.
Yeah.
This year, Halloween is on a Saturday. So come into Le Verdier's where they have everything for the perfect monster mash. The eeriest of costumes. The most frighteningly wonderful makeup. And accessories that will knock your eyes out.
You gave a number for how much gets spent on the Halloween greeting cards.
Oh, yeah.
It was like...
Let me pull up my ledger. So this was a prediction for 2022. Again, I don't know what the real numbers were, but in 2021, economists were predicting $600 million to be spent on greeting cards as part of the overall
spending.
Well,
they've got like 10 of mine, I'd say, already this year. Target, speaking still of Target, at least the one in Burbank, the greeting card section is like right next to the door. And it's like that $1, $3, $5 section of like impulse items is on the left side. And then greeting cards is on the right side. So I can never like forget.
Mm-hmm. Oh, are you talking about the Empire Center Target? Yeah, I knew that one.
Actually, you're more mobile than me. You want to grab those cards?
I sure will.
Halloween greeting postcards were a thing before Halloween greeting cards.
And I think we've talked about those a bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, you were the one that told me how popular postcards used to be, just in general. And then the availability of telephones kind of tamped that down.
Right.
Not just for Halloween postcards.
Right.
But it wasn't long before Halloween greeting cards became a thing. And it feels like they've gotten bigger the last 20 years, or I've just been using them more these last 20 years.
Sure.
I can't really say.
Obviously, you've been using them more, but I do think you see sections for them. And I don't think you did before. Yeah. Or if you did, it was much smaller. Yeah.
Okay. Originally for me, you know, I moved to Los Angeles and I'd see my friends when I go home for Christmas. And then I'd realize that it had been almost 10 months since I'd talked to any of them. And it's like, well, I didn't want to show up letting a whole year having gone by and just, you know, like showing up again going, hey, Merry Christmas, I'm back. Mm-hmm. So I thought like, well, let's just send them a little proof of life and send them a Halloween card and let them know that I'm coming back in a couple months.
Stick that in their pipe and smoke it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just keeping in touch with various people and like, isn't it nice to get a card and to give a card? I try to not exactly personalize them, but of course you don't want to get one that's like too silly for someone who's not a very silly person.
Yeah.
You don't want it to be too juvenile for some people, but like the sense of fun should be there. One year, the first year that my sister went to grad school, she was living off campus and just her own apartment in a city where she didn't know anybody except for like her fellow students. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't much partying for her, just a lot of studying. So I wanted to send her a Halloween care package, and I went to Target, and I filled it with like little trinkets and like rubber spiders and stuff. But I remember I got this cardboard coffin, and on another aisle, I had seen a big novelty thing of hot sauce, like Frank's hot sauce, and my sister uses a lot of hot sauce. So I remember taking it over to the coffin and like making sure it fit.
Yeah.
And I was like, jackpot. This will be the centerpiece of my care package.
Uh-huh.
And then when it came to the greeting card to include in it, Halloween greeting cards tend to sort of be either childish, like, enjoy tricks or treats.
Mm-hmm.
Very sentimental, being like, although we can't be together, the Halloween wind will connect us.
I've never seen a Halloween card like that. Yeah. I've seen Christmas ones.
It's like from a distance kind of cards or something like
that. I didn't know people got so wistful about being apart on Halloween.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're out there.
When we're together, darling, every night is Halloween.
And then there's the party down cards where it's like, you're going to party so hard this Halloween.
Yeah.
And I was like, nope, nope, and no.
Yeah.
What's left? fart jokes.
I was just about to say, there is always a class of greeting cards that's, like, pretty crass. That's, like, either about boobs or sagging boobs. Hey, we're real old now. I mean, you know, like birthday cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, potty humor.
Trying to get a Valentine's card for a sibling.
Mm.
If you take away the romantic, most of what's left is fart jokes.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to, I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
Put a pin in the fart joke card.
Sure.
Cards.
Depends on the joke.
So I found one of like a drawing of like a guy with like a mohawk with like a safety pin in his nose standing in a pumpkin patch. And it, on the inside just said, punk in patch.
No, that's good.
And like, happy Halloween.
I love a pun. I love a really good pun.
Yeah. And I was like, winner.
Yeah.
So while I really don't really remember most Halloween cards that I've sent, I remember that one.
Yeah.
And I got a stack here already, Kent, if you want to look what... You're going to be getting one of these.
I wonder which one.
And I always try not to send the same one twice to somebody, but...
I don't know how you would know.
Vague memories.
Your mind's a steel trap. Oh, this one has a skeleton in a car, and it says... Well, it's a car with Dracula teeth. Just rattling by with a Halloween high. Cute. We love a rhyme. Don't know what I'd boo without you, from a little cute, the cutest ghost I've ever seen in a tree. The inside of the card says, thanks for being so wonderful. That's lovely. I love that. Okay. This one has...
There are some repeats in there because...
Yeah. This one has some DIY ghosts. They're like ghosts made of dum-dums.
Or Tootsie Roll Pops.
Or Tootsie Roll Pops. On the inside it says, make every bite count. Very cute. Oh, you've got two of those.
I got like four of those.
Bunches of, I mean, I feel like it's a good card.
Once you find a winner,
yeah,
it just like,
sure,
grab four.
This one is a jokester of a jack-o'-lantern, and on the front of the card, he is asking, how do you fix a broken jack-o'-lantern? And on the inside, his punchline is, with a pumpkin patch. That's pretty good. It says, have a happy Halloween.
There's a couple of aunts that'll be getting that one.
Yes, that's a really good one. Okay, here is one. The front just says, boo. The inside says, that pretty much covers it. Happy Halloween. That's great. These are some great finds. For some reason, even though I've been a recipient of Halloween cards from you,
mm-hmm.
I don't think I ever knew it was such a thing that you did.
Well, you only see the one I send you.
Right. Yeah. But now you've given away your secret, and now I won't feel as special. I'm kidding. Because I know how thoughtfully you are about picking them out.
There's a small section among these cards for Halloween birthdays. And I'm glad they don't discount the people who have Halloween birthdays.
That's true. Yeah, because often I do get birthday Halloween-y birthday cards from you.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Because your birthday is not on Halloween.
It's like 5 days before.
Like 5 days before.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So let's talk to that.
Wow, great segue. Great segue.
You bring the numbers, I'll bring the segue.
Yeah. As part of our research and discussion about this topic, you asked me to sort of speak to having a Halloween adjacent birthday and what that was like growing up.
You have to check your iPad to see what it was like growing up?
No, I'm just trying to see if I couldn't remember if I'd written any notes about it or if I was just going to bring it from my brain. Did I? I did. That'll teach you to make fun of me. So... To sort of help with this, I called up my mom, and I was asking her about a couple things, one of which was, I know that I had a couple of heavily Halloween-y birthdays. Mostly I remember those because there are pictures as evidence. One picture I couldn't find that I would have sent to you was when my mom made a jack-o'-lantern cake for me, and I have it somewhere, couldn't find it, but she did a pound cake and then had a Swiss cake roll as the stem, black licorice to make the... eyes and the mouth. It was a very good cake. But I did send you pictures of this witch cake I had for, I think, my 12th or 13th birthday. And in some of the pictures of my friends and I, like, dancing in my living room, you could see some of the black and orange, like, crepe paper and balloons. So I asked my mom, I was like, hey, so when you threw me these Halloween birthdays, was that something I asked for? And she seemed to say yes. She was like, yeah, because, you know, when you were really young, it's not like... Because your birthday was close to Halloween, we just threw you a Halloween birthday party every year. And I was like, no, I remember that. You know, one memorable birthday was we went to Chick-fil-A. Like, I had a Chick-fil-A birthday. And I actually remember that one. That wasn't Halloween-y at all. So basically by her accounts, it was when I started getting a little older and loving
like 10?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
And loving the holiday a little more that I would say, you know, I want a cake with a witch on it or whatever. So there was that. And I did ask her, like, did you find that it got easier over the years to find decorations? And she, I don't think she paid that close of attention, but she did say that she felt like the decorations, as it were kind of basic. So you had orange and black balloons. She was like, it wasn't kind of like it is now where.
Yeah.
If you wanted to do zombie tiki Halloween birthday, like, you know what I mean?
There's a place for that.
Extremely specific decorations exist. So you kind of had to take what you could get.
If you want all spiders, you can get all spiders.
Totally. But I think my most profound takeaway from talking to her about this, she was talking about the year I was born. And she said that she remembered, you know, she stayed home with me, but mm-hmm. I have an older brother about 6 years older. So he obviously was prime trick-or-treating age.
Yeah.
So I guess my dad took my little brother, I think maybe over to like grandparents' neighborhood, did the trick-or-treating thing. My mom stayed home with me. And she said, she had kind of had a revelation on the phone. She was like, you know, I didn't even think to dress you up or anything. You were a newborn.
5 days old.
Right. And I said, I think I would attribute that to the fact that you were just, like, obviously dealing with a newborn.
Yeah.
But also, Facebook and Instagram didn't exist. And while I think people definitely dressed up their babies as little pumpkins and stuff back in the mid-80s when I was born,
mm-hmm.
I think that you're way more likely to, while you're pregnant in the year of our Lord Beyonce 2023, if you're pregnant in the summer and you know you're going to have a baby before October, you're probably, whilst you're pregnant, you're shopping for Halloween costumes. These are things that people think about.
Because now, other people have let us know that you can.
Yes, exactly that.
Before, they were living their lives ignorant, I'll say, to the idea that they could put a green beanie on your head with a little stem and an orange, I'll just say sack.
Yeah.
Baby sack.
Yeah.
Is a better term.
Yeah. Onesie.
But onesie.
Or a little, yeah, I think a baby sack is a much funnier term. But yes, exactly. That's what I said to her. I was like,
you know,
it didn't occur to you because you probably didn't even know you could.
You didn't have the million most creative people getting upvoted.
Right.
Look at this
adorable baby dressed like a turkey or whatever. I was like, you didn't have that. You were just dealing with being a new mom.
Yeah.
And she was like, good point. But I thought that was interesting that she was like, you know, I wonder why I didn't dress you up. And I was like, probably because
you're a reasonable person in 1984.
Totally. Yeah.
That's why.
And this is something that I also kind of came around to thinking about when I was researching home decorations and how that whole industry has exploded. Like, you know, the 12-foot skeletons and all of that. And that stuff gets bigger and bigger. But I wholeheartedly attribute the rise in every little tiny newborn baby around October has a pumpkin costume or whatever. Home decorations getting more and more crazy for Halloween. Mm-hmm. You know, some people do Halloween as big or bigger than they do Christmas to social media. It's the same reason why baby showers are now like, there's a photo booth and it's this whole production and there's a theme and every item of food is themed towards it and everything's very aesthetic.
Once you find out you can, what's right. stopping you?
Well, and not just that you can, but that the Joneses are. And you feel okay. like if you, and I'm speaking, I have like a gaggle of girlfriends from high school who are all moms. And I've heard them talk about other people, like
people they don't know in real life.
Or people they know in real life, but just sort of like, I know that it's on their minds. I mean, I think some people opt out of it, but I think there has to be an internal engine of like, well, I don't want my kid to feel like I didn't put as much effort in. If the people across the street invite you and your kid to their party and it's a jungle theme and there's a fake giraffe and there's all this, you know, a huge photo booth and every food item is themed after the theme. And then your kid gets like, you know, a slip and slide and a sheet cake from Costco.
Open the bag of chips.
Right.
Hey, I got both kinds.
Which, by the way, for the most part, were my birthdays growing up. Like, mm-hmm. I just told you I had a really great birthday at Chick-fil-A. But I think there's a very real sense of keeping up with the Joneses, which is not a new concept. But I think that social media has, everybody feels like they have to plus whatever they're doing. And I think that has absolutely affected people's efforts when it comes to decorating their homes. I mean, I follow several homes on Instagram, accounts dedicated to and run by the people who live in these homes of my neighborhood in Toluca Lake. Like, they've named their house something for Halloween time.
For Halloween.
So there's one called LA Creepy Casa, and I know which house that is. And they decorate for Halloween. They don't make money off of it. They just, like, they have an Instagram account.
Just
and
the
they
fact that the houses have names, like estates in England.
Right.
Or Terra.
Yeah.
It's like their house doesn't have a name the rest of the year, but they do Halloween to such a degree, it gets a name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think where I will round out the birthday discussion is that there is a question I have grappled with and will never get solved, which is, it's a very chicken egg thing for me. I've often wondered how much of why I love Halloween has to do with the proximity to my birthday and how your birthday is always
fun. How many warm feelings you have wrapped up in Halloween because of your birthday's proximity?
Yeah.
I'll never know.
And it doesn't really matter. But it absolutely, you know, Halloween became a part of my birthday the older I got. And even to this day, I always like to do something spooky around my birthday. A couple years ago, I did a haunted walking tour of Hollywood, things like that.
I was born the week that the big summer blockbusters tend to come out. And now I'm a cinephile.
There you go.
Yeah.
There's something to it here. We've done good work here today. I did want to share with you a little bit of history of the White House and Halloween decorations.
I've seen a photo of JFK.
Yes.
With his kid in a
costume. I've seen that too. Did you ever look into the history of, like, was there a starting point for when the White House started to decorate for Halloween?
No, I've never looked into that.
Allow me.
You know what? Much like a hospital, you don't want to get too macabre at the White House. you want to stick to, like, scarecrows.
Yeah, for sure. Let me give you just a little bit, just a little
no
a little
plastic
snack.
Limbs on the lawn.
No. So on October 30th, 1958, First Lady Mamie Eisenhower decorated the White House for Halloween for the first time. October 30th, 1958 was the first time the White House was decorated.
So this would also be when the baby boomers are trick-or-treating, and trick-or-treating kind of became as we know it now. Also, the shock package was out, and we were starting our first wave of being monster crazy. Not necessarily Halloween crazy, but just monster movie crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mamie Eisenhower decides.
So, yeah. She hosted a lunch for the wives of staff members in the state dining room of the White House. Decorations included skeletons hanging from the wall lights, yellow jack-o'-lanterns, and shocks of dried corn in the corners of the room, and state dining room columns that were decorated at their bases with brown corn stalks, pumpkins, and red apples. The tables had miniature witches on broomsticks and 16 silver bowls filled with yellow and bronze chrysanthemums. Scattered on the tables were autumn leaves and autumn nuts, ears of dried corn, as well as dried gourds and dried squash. Black cats, black owls, disembodied witch heads, and goblins hung from the chandeliers in the foyer.
Goblin is very general and could have come in any form. I really wonder what a goblin that I assume you can purchase. I doubt these were, like, customized goblins.
It's the White House. I don't know.
What a goblin even look like?
You're going to have to ask Mamie Eisenhower.
I pictured, like, big ears.
Right.
Maybe
small. Green. Oh, I don't know.
Or claws or something?
Probably.
Boy, everything sounded so very, like, harvest traditional, with a few witches and skeletons
Absolutely.
Thrown in there for fun.
Yeah.
Until you got to goblins.
I know.
And then I just, like, I don't even know what to picture. All right. Good. How'd it go over? I know really anything socially in the White House, half the press will laud it, and the other half will be like,
sure.
Right now, with everything that's going on, we're really going to put a bunch of goblins in the chandeliers.
Mm-hmm.
You should be more concerned with, and then something.
Sure, of course. Well, the website I found this on was something like whitehousehistory.org. I mean, it's just a privately run website somebody put together. But there was a fun page about Halloween at the White House that started with this and chronicles how different presidents have handled Halloween over the years. Hmm. And one of the most delightful things for me was George W. Bush's I think they had a dog and a cat, but their cat, India, is this black cat. And there are several pictures of her, you can look it up, dressed up for Halloween and just looking grumpy about it. Really, really cute stuff. Really, really cute.
You guys look ridiculous.
I've killed men for saying less than that, but I'll let you live, seeing as how you're the only man who'll change me kitty litter.
Cat.
Yes, Marshall.
When you came up with a topic that I thought to be more about products.
It is more about products.
Business. Okay. The business of products.
The business of the holiday.
Yes. I went to a couple things in my brain that I wanted. I was like, oh, I'm going to find out more about that. The thing that I really wanted to look at was spooky sound effect albums and tapes. Just Halloween sounds. Now, there's plenty of Halloween music. That's for another year.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some really choice ones where they tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
By and large, I'll be ignoring those. I'm just talking about you put it on and it's just rattling chains and distant screams and oh. And then a lot of screams.
Yeah.
And then a creaking door and just all thunder and
lightning cracks. The kind of thing you'd put the cassette tape in the boom box and hide it on the front porch behind something so that it would play, so that when the trick-or-treaters came up, they would hear spooky sounds.
Kat, you just said the magical words. Boom box.
Yeah.
Because they really, there was what was described as a glut of the tapes in the late 80s. And I was like, why the late 80s?
And did I had some of them for sure.
Did we get scarier as a people? No, the portability of music players got better.
Yeah.
This is hi-fi. High fidelity. That means this is the highest quality fidelity.
Hi-fi stereos became available around 1958, which is probably why, although nothing has been pointed out or claims to be the oldest Scary Sounds album, the oldest one I could find was from 1960.
Mm.
And they didn't really start doing sound effect albums in general. Not just Scary Sounds, but like, you can get just like the sound of a train. And I listened to one when I was a teenager, and it was just like 5 minutes of gunshots and ricochets of all different calibers.
It makes me think about that scene in A Nightmare on Elm Street where he's trying to convince his mom that
yes.
he's staying with his cousin out by the airport. So it's like airport sounds. But
yeah.
then they get to the wrong part of the tape where there's like drag racing and
right.
screams and like, you know.
Right. No, just some neighbors having a fight, I guess. I'm fine. I'll call you in the morning.
I just feel like this illustrates so well how much we have at our fingertips right now. And
oh,
how
yeah.
novel it was then to go, oh, there's 100 different sounds on this, you know? Versus, like, I could have it up in 5 seconds.
The speed
anything
of thought.
Anything I wanted to listen to. But then it was like you had to wait on the album or, you know.
And find
and,
the right one.
Yeah.
It's like, well, on this track, it's all the engines starting. True.
No, for real.
There was one called Spook Stuff for Halloween, also known as Howlin' Halloween, or The Sounds of Spook Stuff. Included women screaming, creaks, wind, yowling cats, and bubbling sounds.
Oh, they love yowling cats on those albums.
They really do. Outside, on the cover of it, just to let you know, like, this is 1960. There was a picture of a witch, and if you look carefully, she's not riding a broom. It's a rocket.
Oh.
Because of the space race.
Oh, of course.
That's where we were at.
Sure.
Also included was high-pitched laughter. Which...
Like a madman, I guess.
Or like imps or goblins.
There you go.
And I kind of ran the dates. And so this was around the time of like Purple People Eater when like you would make a novelty album. And the ability to pitch someone's voice up.
Sure.
You know, was something you could do easily. And this was also like when David Seville and the Chipmunks came
uh-huh,
out.
Uh-huh. Right.
You know, if you wanted to go funny or wacky or interesting, it's as easy as turning a knob, I guess.
Yeah. It's semi-related, but Matthew is a big fan of, like, really high-pitched or sped-up, like, pop songs or like the Chipmunk version, sure, like even of songs today, he'll be like this one's incredible. And it's always fun. I never would think about that, but he goes down rabbit holes like that all the time. So it hasn't lost its luster for some.
Good, because it's got a tradition dating back to the late 50s.
Yeah.
You are a bold and courageous person, afraid of nothing. High on a hilltop near your home, there stands a dilapidated old mansion. Some say the place is haunted, but you don't believe in such myths.
Kat, you had told me that you owned the Disney version.
Mm-hmm.
Chilling, thrilling sounds of the haunted house.
I have the record, yeah.
Yeah. I now know there was a few different versions. The first one came out in 1964, which, for your Disney history, the haunted mansion, the exterior had been built and was then, like, visible.
And just looming for a few years over the park.
And I think, like, a sign went in the front, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, coming soon. But that sign stayed up for years.
We're collecting ghosts
And I'm going to look at this album, part because there are Disney historians that can, like, tell me whose idea it was and how it got made and who made it. And there's still some mystery behind it, but many of these albums are just kind of, you know, who made it? Some guy. Does the company still exist? No. Mm-hmm. When did it go out of business? 1 year after they made this tape. There's not a lot of oral histories for most Halloween sound effect collections, but there sure is for the chilling, thrilling sounds of the haunted house. The mystery behind it is just how much was it supposed to tie in with the haunted mansion?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of evidence that says that the picture on the front was concept art for the haunted mansion. So there's that. I think it was just kind of in the air. Like, they were nowhere near completion.
Yeah.
But if somebody came up with a decent haunted house idea, it's like, great, because we've got this other thing in the hopper. A producer for Disneyland Records, Jimmy Johnson, came up with it. And they had, you know, 1964. That's like 30 years worth of just sound effects. So, like, the cat, which can be, like, alarming and kind of scary. That's just the sounds they would use when Pluto got into, like, a fight with a cat.
Sure.
If you listen for it, you can hear the lonesome ghost just, like, sort of yawning, just like... But you stick it in a rainstorm on this, like, hi-fi record album, and it sounds much more menacing than when you saw it in Lonesome Ghosts.
Yeah.
Ghosts!
Ghosts!
Now, a lot of these albums, the genre of album, I'd say the better ones are the ones that have side A, because it's when things had sides, would be all, like, one haunted house. And then side B would be individual sound effects, like, so you can make your own, you know, put on your own radio show or something. Mm-hmm. And I think the average person really didn't have that kind of technology to just, like, do needle drops in the moment.
Right.
Off of an actual record album. But they were always very interesting and sounded, like, very professional. Like, this is what the professionals use. But side A, as just one continuous haunted house, meant you could use this album for your own home haunt.
Right.
And back, I feel I do need to explain this because it's... You rarely ever see this in movies. I'd refer to record players. Whenever you see a record player in a movie, it's just playing a record. But only if someone had died or something do you get to see the function where it will pick up and the needle will go all the way back to the beginning and just play the record over again.
Right.
Like, that was a pretty standard feature after a certain date.
I have this very unit in my home.
Really?
Yes, I do.
But you only tend to see it in media these days if, like, something went wrong.
No one's
wrong.
There to stop the album.
Yeah, so it'll just play into perpetuity, like, until the cops bust down the door.
Right.
You know. So, if you've got yourself a haunt and you can run speakers from your hi-fi over to your setup, you could just play side A all night, and it would just, you know, every 30 minutes it would go... And start all over again.
Sure.
Whereas this Disney chilling, thrilling album, the haunted house portion is only about 3 minutes long.
Hmm.
And they had a woman, I'll just say her name because there's historians that they know all the stuff. Laura Olsher. She was already in the studio with a, like, having fun telling time thing that they would do. And they're like, how about you narrate this? And she would set up. She would just like, you're in the jungle now. You know, you're doing this. You're outside of a home. It was always you. Mm. It would always start with you.
You are exploring a rugged mountainous region of jagged peaks and yawning chasms. Stretched across one black and bottomless canyon is a wooden suspension bridge.
Very immersive. So,
this album really wasn't meant to play, like, for the neighbor kids right. when they trick-or-treat.
It's a personal experience at home.
Yeah, it's just something to listen to at home.
Yeah.
And enjoy at home. The track listing for the first one was, like, Haunted House, The Very Long Fuse, like, Long Dynamite. Timber, which is like you're sawing a tree and then it falls on you. The Shipwreck, The Unsafe Bridge. Chinese Water Torture did not age well.
Yikes.
There's one called Martian Monsters. It's like, you're on a trip to Mars. You're landing and they've sent a party to greet you. And it sounds like they eat you. But it's all like pitched up like the chipmunks.
That was delicious. I wonder what it was.
Ew.
You know?
Wait, do I see one called Your Pet Cat?
Yeah, sorry. Your Pet Cat was one of them. I believe it's like a jaguar or like a like tiger sounds.
Ooh,
or something.
Very scary.
Just more basic. Screams and groans. Thunder and lightning. Cat fight. A collection of creaks, which I then wrote the note, sounds like farts.
Uh-oh.
Birds, drips and splashes, and things in space. So that was 64. When the mansion opened, it got like another boost in sales because I think people would like buy it at Disneyland.
Sure.
If not, you know, elsewhere, just being like, yeah, like that haunted mansion. Awesome. It wound up going like gold by the 1980s. It sold like, you know, millions of copies. By 73, the inside sleeve had party tips on it.
Ooh.
For throwing a Halloween party. And
Go on.
Just to tie it back with the mansion, some of like the drawings on this sleeve on like how to have a good time at Halloween were characters from the Haunted Mansion. So even though this didn't start per se as a Haunted Mansion thing, they've never been too far apart.
I just want a party.
And it includes decorations. Cover all furniture with white sheets. This gives the house an unlived-in, deserted look, like all good haunted houses have. That never occurred to me, of course. Yeah, the sheets. Cut up bats and spiders. Lighting, use yellow, green, blue, and red 25-watt bulbs. Or just get whatever it is you have, Kat.
The Philips Hue.
Hue?
Yeah.
Under spooky party games, Snow White's apple on a string.
Sure.
We're theming.
Yeah. Snap apple.
Word game, guessing game, toss the ball game into a pumpkin.
Sure.
All right. Let's bob for apples.
But then, fortune teller.
Nice.
Which we've discussed on this podcast. Fortune telling games were the cornerstone of Halloween parties for centuries. I know in America they were, as most of it would be, who am I going to marry?
What do you think, Josephine? What does it say in your crystal ball?
Okay, so in this, it says to, like, write down all these questions, make up some of your own, put them in a bowl, they'll select a paper, and the fortune teller, who is, like, someone, it says here, you can dress like a swami, like the Zoltar machine.
Sure.
Under its sample questions, the first one, will I be happily married? Because that's just what Halloween's all about.
Yep.
Finding out if you're going to get married through fortune-telling games.
It was for a period of time, sure.
But this one is set up like a kid's joke book, but like a roast of the kids.
Boom. Roasted.
And the swami, which I'm picturing is an adult with a bath towel on their head.
Uh-huh.
If they follow the instructions on this album, which I'd love to know if anybody ever did, ever.
Yeah.
They'd be prepared with the Don Rickles Jr. style answers to these fortune-telling questions.
Right. So a question is, will I be happily married? And the answer is, yes, many times. Will I be wealthy? Only if you have money. Will I get into the movies? Someday, yes, if you buy a ticket.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Will I have many children? No, just one at a time. This one I like. How can I make a room look bright and cheerful? Try leaving it.
Burned, whoever
Sick
got
burn.
That one.
Sick burn. How can I... Oh, this is... I like this one a lot. How can I attract the opposite sex? Drop your eyes and then let the other person pick them up. That's gross.
So, drop your eyes just means, like, look down.
I know, right? But then it becomes a literal.
And then it's like
meaning.
You've lost your eyeballs in the ground.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's kind of a cop.
And then, what does my palm tell you? Answer: either your future looks dark or your hand is dirty. How can I become musically inclined? Lean on a piano sometime. That's good. Oh, and this is a pretty savage burn. Should I have my singing voice cultivated? No, plowed under would be better. Yuck, yuck, yuck.
And the more benign, how can I get into a locked haunted house? Try using the skeleton key. Sure that one brought down the house.
Get your hands on the Spooky Sounds tape, full of creepy sounds and Halloween theme songs. $1.95 with any $5 Hallmark purchase, only at participating Hallmark stores. It's a scream.
During the glut of boombox era Halloween sound tapes, usually these will be impulse items, like up at the register, usually in like a piece of cardboard with just like a blister pack.
So many Halloween horror tapes. And that's what we're going to talk about today on the Multimedia Chronicles.
So thank you, YouTube, again, for having people who show off their loves on YouTube for any of us who can just, whatever we think of, there's someone out there who loves it and wants to share it with the world.
From 1991 to 1993, I collected a whole pile of these.
Zarin Murek, a video blogger.
Ah.
Seems to be a pop culture guy, and he not only enjoyed these, like, spooky cassette tapes, but he also kept their packaging. And I love the way some of these were promoted.
Get this Halloween record. Sounds to make you shiver, just $1.89.
Some of the titles: The House That Died, Haunted House, Spooky Halloween Sounds, Horrors of the Night, Sounds of Horror, Halloween Sounds of Horror, Horrible Sounds of Halloween, 45 thoroughly terrifying sound effects. And a lot of these would just have, like, pictures of haunted houses in the background, if not, like, a skeleton.
Happy Halloween!
In one of them, this one was Chamber of Horrors, a guy keeps saying Happy Halloween over and over. I mean, not like that, like, Happy Halloween! So, it's believed that one is more designed for actually, like, playing on Halloween night for trick-or-treaters, not in, like, a haunted maze. But, you know, the turnaround, you're in and out in, like, a minute when you're a trick-or-treater. So this one just keeps playing, Happy Halloween, expecting, you know, the next batch of trick-or-treaters to come through.
Happy Halloween!
A Night in a Graveyard, recorded live on the estate of Count Dracula. Spend a night in this graveyard, if you dare.
That's good.
Yeah. Ghostly Sounds by Peter Pan Records. A perfect party record, but warns that it's not for the very young. I believe that Disney, Chilling Thrilling, said it'll scare your socks off.
I believe it did the first time I heard it.
It scared your socks right off. Now, while some of these are better than others, and the recording quality can be better than others, they all make pretty similar claims, but this one's one of my favorite. This one was Spooky Halloween Sounds. It claimed monster voices, cackling witches, Frankenstein footsteps. So they've got footsteps like every other one, but this one is Frankenstein footsteps.
Footsteps, footsteps!
Wolfman howls. Not just the howls that everyone has. This is the wolfman. Barking dogs, squeaking doors, and Dracula sounds, and much more.
I am Count... Dracula.
What are Dracula sounds?
I couldn't tell you.
I don't know. I think they just kind of made it up.
Maybe dripping.
Okay.
I don't know.
Flapping bats and coffin doors?
Yeah, for sure. There you go.
Okay, probably.
I'm a bug!
And so a few of the slogans for the tapes, usually written in orange. Terrifying sound effects for Halloween fun. You know, another one says, like, 30 weird minutes. Another one, 30 minutes of spine-tingling sound effects. For the ride of the Headless Horseman, which one side was the story of Ichabod Crane, and the other side were all the sound effects they used in the story of Ichabod Crane, which is interesting. Ride along, if you dare. And then on the back it claimed, recorded live in the village of Sleepy Hollowville.
What?
Right?
It's a little weird off-brand Sleepy Hollow.
Recorded at Ichabod Crane Studios.
Liars.
I don't think it
was. Every last one of them.
And the warning on this one was, do not listen to this alone. Maybe hazardous to your health.
That's good.
And then this one gives you the instructions of, turn your house into a chilling, thrilling, fearful domain of monsters, ghosts, and goblins.
Greetings, Wolfbait. This is Elvira, the Mistress of the Dark, and I want to welcome you to my little tape of horrors.
In 1987, the Elvira Fright sound tape came out. And this was part of like a larger line of products that included like a studded leather heavy metal wristband, snake earrings, different makeup, all with Elvira's like approval and image.
Mm-hmm. This soundtrack was recorded by ogres, specters, ghouls, and phantoms. It is guaranteed to drive you out of your skull.
She came in with the only Halloween celebrity endorsed album, like in the packaging and on the introduction, just like a minute-long introduction where she comes on, she says a few puns.
Anyway, you'd have to be a certifiable psychotic to just tolerate this garbage.
To my chagrin, they didn't include her in the scary sounds. And like, how awesome would that have been? You know?
That's so weird.
That they wouldn't do that?
Yeah.
That's something. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. Scream a few times.
Yeah.
You should open the door.
Say a couple punny things.
Just like,
that's what she does.
Just say like, hello, darling.
Hello, darling.
I mean, this is our episode about like Halloween as a business and how this is a product and being in the audio industry. I just have to imagine that it was the kind of thing where they probably already had it produced and they were like, will you sign to put your likeness on this versus it being an organic collaboration or collab, as the kids say, which is, I agree. It feels like a missed opportunity. Like, would it have been that hard to just have her do a couple intros for sections or
not even that, or just sort of slip it in, you know, she's not on all the time, but every few minutes she'll come on and just be like,
wasn't that scary?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like how,
are you shaking in your boots? Like a little bit like the Crypt Keeper.
Listen, sister, if I want your opinion, I'll beat it out of you.
Cassandra Peterson is not really dressing up as Elvira much these days. Not that she's really slowed down with her personal appearances. She's just not like donning the outfit really so much.
Yeah.
But you know what? Audio, it's not too late for an Elvira Scary Sounds audio track.
Yeah, sure, I'll do it for $50.
This Halloween, let the spirit move you at Spirit Halloween Superstore. Immerse yourself in our world of pure Halloween excitement, and there's every kind of makeup for every kind of creature. Plus, the largest selection of life-size and larger animatronic characters in the area. Spirit Halloween is right next to Red Lobster off Joyce and 71B in Fayetteville. Make this Halloween your Halloween at Spirit Halloween Superstore.
Marshall, we can't really talk about Halloween merch and costumes and the Halloween industry without talking for a moment about Spirit Halloween.
It's true.
I am sure everyone listening to this remembers an inflection point in recent years where Spirit Halloween became very much a Halloween staple. Like, it's been around for quite a long time.
It came when the leaves changed colors.
Yeah.
Stayed until about 2 weeks after Halloween.
But I guess what I'm getting at is, obviously, it's been around since 1983. But my point is,
it really got big and popular.
Big, popular, and like polished. It was a thing that, like, every year we take a trip to a Spirit Halloween just to, like, check out everything. Because they're not just selling, like, the Leg Avenue costumes in a bag. They have, like, really incredible animatronics. And the stores, pop-up though they may be, are always outfitted with these really cool displays. And, like, you know, it might be made out of cardboard for the most part, but it's like, ooh, this archway you walk under.
It's interactive.
You know? Absolutely. In fact, I remember last year, the year before, going through, like, a small haunted house inside a Spirit Halloween.
The factory was very impressive.
Yes, but they had, like, an actual, like...
Oh.
Yeah, I mean... Turns? Nobody was waiting for you, but it was like a little dark hallway, and then you just came out the other end. Anyway, just for the tiniest amount of background, there is a really great video I watched on YouTube last year, 2022. The Wall Street Journal did, it might be 5 or 10 minutes, but if you want to search for it, it's really worth your time. It's called How Spirit Halloween Became a Titan of the $10 Billion Halloween Industry. I guess 11 now. But it's a really cool little overview of the history of Spirit Halloween. The first Spirit Halloween popped up in 1983 as an extension of a women's clothing store. In 1999, the CEO sold the company to Spencer's Gifts. We're all familiar with that.
Sure.
And this video talks about how at first landlords weren't really interested in the short-term leases that Spirit wanted, but they worked out some kind of a like clause where if another retailer wants to come in and sign a longer-term lease, Spirit has agreed to pull out. And I don't think they have any trouble, especially these days, unfortunately, finding sure. empty spaces.
We can always just watch a scary movie at my place.
Dude, we need something super creepy or I'm out.
You want something really creepy?
How about a night locked in here?
Pop up Halloween store in a creepy lot?
Awesome.
Booyah!
Now, I remember when they announced this movie and being like, this seems like such a fun idea that they made a movie, Spirit Halloween, but I didn't watch it.
I did.
I heard it wasn't great, but you watched it.
Just for this podcast.
Yeah.
And you were like, I don't think it's very good. And I was like, then I'll have more to talk about.
Right. For sure. You know, we are horror fans, so something not being spoken about as being good doesn't really deter us most of the time.
Well, first of all, it's a straight up children's film.
Okay.
That tweens can enjoy and people of any age can enjoy it, but it stars kids.
Okay.
But the store closed and we're still inside.
You mean the store's locked and we're trapped inside?
Everyone who's ever been in a Halloween store for any length of time will eventually say to themselves, well, what if you set a horror movie in here?
Of course.
You know?
Yeah. It's natural.
And eventually someone's going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
This one didn't do it very well, but it was interesting in that the characters never say out loud the words Spirit Halloween Store.
I want my money back.
But how many times, if they did say it, would it just feel like a giant commercial?
I get it. Yeah.
I guess it was purposeful for that reason. Mm. It also makes it feel as if this script already existed and was called something else. And then Spirit came on board and said, like, well, you can use all of our logos and
sure,
we'll invest, blah, blah, blah. And now it's called Spirit Halloween the Movie.
Is the plot what I would have expected, which is like, oh, they get locked in overnight or they have to go in.
They sneak in.
After hours.
There's a boy with problems due to a family death and then a remarriage. And he's trying to hang on to all the old Halloween stuff. And his friends, they're like, why don't we go to a party instead? And he says, well, I'll think of something better than a party. And it's to sneak into the Spirit Halloween on Halloween night, which is fine.
Does sound fun.
But also, like, he has an established problem with heights because of a fall that they just talk about.
Uh-huh.
Never comes back.
No.
There's a scene where it could have been, and I'm sure it was there and it just got cut. So that's the kind of movie this is.
Okay.
Also, maybe because it was made fairly close to COVID with COVID restrictions, or maybe they just didn't have the money for extras, but they go into the Halloween store the day before Halloween and it is empty. So I could use a line of them going like, oh, we got here at 7:01 a.m. when they first opened.
Sure.
There's no people in it. And when they're in there on Halloween night, I'm like, wow, there's a lot of merchandise on the shelves. It looks like they haven't sold a thing.
Yeah.
So much so, I was completely ready for them to leave and then find out there was never a Spirit Halloween there at all.
Yeah.
It was all like some kind of Brigadoon Spirit Halloween. It just disappears.
Sure.
No, that's not the case.
Okay.
There's an old curse, and the bad guy is the voice of Christopher Lloyd, who's in the beginning. That sort of, like, kid-friendly villain, Christopher Lloyd. There's some good scenes of them, like, clowning around in the store, and that's
what you want.
Fun. And then they go into, like, the back area. I'm like, yep. The back area of those things are just whatever flotsam and jetsam and wreckage and old filing cabinets and whatever that the last business left behind. That they don't bother to move or clean because who cares?
Sure.
We're out of here in 2 months.
Sure.
But then beyond that, they find caves underneath.
Whoa.
Yeah, well, to me, it just says we've abandoned the concept.
Right.
We have found it unsustainable. We said to ourselves, what if we set a horror movie in a Halloween store? And then partway through writing it said, and there's caves underneath.
Right.
They do get back to the store and, like, an evil spirit is making various decorations come to life, which can be pretty fun.
Sure.
Ultimately, until it crosses a threshold of so bad it's camp,
mm-hmm.
it's just going to be kind of a swing and a miss.
Yeah.
But if the Barbie movie has taught us anything, it's that you can make a good movie just based around a product.
You sure can.
So I'm ready for the Spirit Halloween store to take another swing at it. Personally, when I was working at a Halloween store, my notion of a movie, you know, set in a Halloween store, which you can't help but think about after so many hours, would be more about the teenagers that work in one. Because teenagers, them you can slash.
Yeah.
Kids, you can't slash.
Yeah. Kids. Nice. Well, thank you for taking the time.
Yes.
So I didn't have to.
I did tell you that I recently found out that someone I know just got chatty and was like, oh, you're from Dallas. What's that like? And she's like, oh, well, you know, we moved there because my father's work. And I'm like, well, what's that? And she's like, well, he's a lawyer for a company that makes novelty items and Halloween decorations. And I was just like, I think I just found my favorite layer of your onion.
Yeah.
And then I just had like all sorts of questions. So her dad, it sounds like he's the most responsible person in the Fun Factory.
Sure.
Which is, he clears licensing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And not only, I guess, licensing for them to create and manufacture pre-existing intellectual properties, but the example she gave me was that, like, The Office, in the show The Office, Michael Scott has behind him a little dancing chipmunk that belongs to this company, whose biggest claim to fame was the Big Mouth Billy Bass, that they had to clear it with him. So he had to do the paperwork so they could use their dancing chipmunk in the background of various shots of The Office. Which also makes me believe that even though Spirit Halloween is a recognizable store, many of the products in there aren't really from Spirit Halloween.
Yeah.
Which is why when the kids were playing with stuff in like the We're Having Fun montages.
Right.
Or when the evil spirit was possessing stuff, some of them seemed to be like pretty generic things, just like swords and not like an Austin Powers mask. Or even, it doesn't have to be anything as on the nose as Austin Powers. It can just be just the costume created by a company that you'd have to get permission from every single costume company that you use.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. There's your dry facts.
Wow.
In this business.
So we both Halloween, came with dry facts, Halloween you're telling me. Yeah.
Podcast.
Certainly no Halloween would be complete without a visit with Charlotte's very own Dr. Evil.
John, Halloween is like our Christmas.
The macabre has always fascinated Philip Morris. For nearly 20 years, Morris, frequently accompanied by an entourage of grotesque fiends of friends, has moved about movie houses and theaters, spreading mayhem and magic. His Dr. Evil was a television regular here in Charlotte for years. Morris has even developed an impressive business based on horror and fantasy.
Yeah, we can talk, we can get into Morris costumes.
We can get into Morris costumes. They say one size fits all, but I never believe it.
Nice.
All right, Kat, a book from my personal library is by your elbow, if you want to just, other elbow. See the green book?
Yes, I do.
Ghostmasters, a book all about the old-timey spook shows.
You are the one who taught me about spook shows.
Also known as ghost shows.
Also known as ghost shows. So I love that it came up in our research for this episode by happenstance. But I am noticing something about this cover, which is that on the cover of this book,
Dr. Evil
is advertising Dr. Evil and his terrors of the unknown. And now you and I both know that Dr. Evil is a character created by Philip Morris of Morris Costumes.
Yeah, two things. One, we're not referring to Dr. Evil, the Austin Powers character.
That's right.
And Philip Morris is not the cigarette company, but a guy named Philip Morris.
It's a little confusing, huh?
But if you go to the page I've got marked, I got a little playing card in there. It is a whole chapter on Philip Morris.
Did you already own this book?
Yeah, I've owned it for years.
Holy crap. Did you already know about him in particular? Did you?
I knew about Dr. Evil.
Okay. Wow.
And you sent me, like, pictures of the posters from this guy's spook show.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's on my wall.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Right there. That's a reproduction, naturally.
Did he do a Dr. Satan as well?
Apparently in Mexico, he was Dr. Satan. Because that was the closest translation to Dr. Evil.
Nice.
I think a lot of the reason there's more written about him, you saw he got a whole chapter in that book, is because he was actually a later, in the tail end of the final heyday of the old time spook shows. So he was around to be interviewed after the fact and you know, materials of his could be preserved. But yeah, back up. Why are we so concerned with this magician?
Yeah. So when we talked about doing this topic, you were saying we should talk about nostalgic favorites, like costumes or products or whatever that like stick out in our minds, like the Boo buckets or whatever. And maybe I was looking around for things like that. I was like, oh, famous costumes, you know, but I wound up coming across some information about this company, Morris Costumes. And I was like, that sounds familiar to me.
Yeah.
Probably part of the reason why is because they're a fairly large company.
Mm-hmm.
But probably another reason is they are North Carolina based.
You were North Carolina based.
And Charlotte based, as a matter of fact. Now, I'm from outside of Charlotte. But gotta love learning that an iconic company in the Halloween industry, iconic to enough people that there is a lot of information out there, a lot of it based on this history of the spook shows. But also, a couple people took some time to interview these people who started this company.
Well, this Philip Morris, he had a lot of stops along the way. He did a lot of things with his life.
And I find it interesting that in my research, I found a few different... There's a little bit of a Rashomon element going on here, because he'll say one thing and you'll hear his son say another, and then the wife will say something slightly different about how certain...
Yeah, if you read the article phases, back to back.
Yeah, yeah. Notably, I mean, one thing I'll say is, like, the interview that I saw with Philip Morris, or maybe something I read, he was saying that it was a general, I'm not saying this is malicious, but it was just a general statement of like, ah, yes, you know, we started renting out costumes to the neighborhood because we had made some costumes. And then there was an interview with his wife that I watched, who was the co-founder of the company. And she was like, oh, it was my idea to start renting them out to neighbors. And I was like, interesting. He left out that it was his wife's idea.
Well, the version I read was that it all started because for his stage act, he needed a gorilla outfit. Gorilla outfits ran in the thousands of dollars even back then. And he thought, oh, I could make my own.
Right.
And although the first one did not turn out well, he was determined. And once he sort of figured out how to work with a certain type of latex,
yeah,
he found he could not mass produce them, but make more than just for himself and then sell to like circuses and sideshows.
Yeah.
And gorilla was a very popular costume for a while there.
It sure was. Yeah, but I guess what I'm talking about is subsequent to making them for the shows, people in the neighborhood were like, those costumes are so great. And according to his wife, she they might like to rent them. That part was her idea. I'm sticking with that story.
Sure. Well, let's before we, I don't know if we can even go in order, but like, what's the end result? The end result of everything we're saying is a huge company located in North Carolina that does, I don't know if you got like a statistic of how much business they do a year, but they do big business.
And they fairly recently sold to a larger company.
Okay.
Or at least, I mean, they're still helping run the company.
It's a family company.
Yep. They still have a very heavy hand.
Oh,
and they still run the day-to-day. Scott, the son, and then his mom is still alive.
And it's Sean, the grandson, who's doing a big push to get the story of the Morris Company out there.
Right.
Which is where we found old articles and old videos and stuff, which were all like very interesting.
Yeah.
So what ended with a, I'm just going to say multi-million dollar
company? I really can't speculate, but I would guess, yeah.
The numbers they actually keep giving isn't the money they make, but in articles, it's how big their actual headquarters is, how many acres it is.
They apparently carry 28,000 items. And yeah, I saw them talking about how big the warehouse is.
Their success was measured in acreage.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
But it all started with young Philip Morris in Kalamazoo, who wanted to be a magician.
Yeah, this is, I think, what ended up, when I started the slightest dive into like, oh, how cool. This is a family-owned Halloween costume and decor company. And it was like, you just dip the slightest toe in and you're like, wait a tick. This isn't just somebody who was like, no, I just got into the business of distributing costumes. This is like bona fide. Well, you know, they have the receipts to back it up, like spooky show people.
We are spooky show people.
We are spooky show people who wound up getting into manufacturing and selling costumes. No, they came by it honestly, in other words.
I know we've been mentioning it, but just for the audience, when we say spook show,
yeah,
they started as like a seance show back like after World War One. What they became by Dr. Evil's time, by when Philip Morris was
playing his character,
Evil. Booking theaters all over the country, very big business, is by then the theaters were transforming into movie theaters. So they would put on their magic show, but They would concentrate on the more macabre parts of their magic. The women's head being cut off. The gorilla girl. Snakes roam the audience. These acts would end in a blackout. Which is where they turn off all the lights. And the blackout would then lead into a horror movie. And sometimes two horror movies in an evening. And by the end of the last few decades of the Spook Show, horror movies were like a big element of it. And they would have one of Dr. Evil's claims to fame was the Win a Dead Body contest. Sometimes as a twist contest, I even saw.
Mm.
And the dead body would be a frozen chicken.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I do want to back up for a moment, though, and say, like, prior to officially getting into putting on these ghost shows, I read a couple versions of this. One was that young Philip Morris left home at an early age and sort of got into the circus and doing these shows. But another version of it that I read was that he was kicked out. This says...
Like of high school?
Of his house. Oh, it says, it all started when young Philip Morris was kicked out of his home in Michigan due to a youthful indiscretion involving a cherry bomb. Left to fend for himself, Philip and his young wife, Amy. So was he living at home and already married? I guess that's possible. Hit the road doing what they knew best, entertaining crowds of people with magic and what came to be known as ghost shows. The point is, he was a young guy who was very interested in magic and tomfoolery and illusion and all these
showmanship.
Things. And just like the most American thing ever, like found a way to make good money doing the rapscallion-y things that he already enjoyed doing.
Do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life.
Right. And I know I want to hear more about the ghost shows and the details you know about that. But in the broad strokes of it, they were doing these ghost shows. And then he and his wife, Amy, got really good at making costumes and started selling them, started very small. It grew. And it became this big behemoth.
Yeah.
In person, on stage, first time here, three all-new Super Shock Shows. Stage show number one. From beyond the grave, it's Dr. Evil and his terrors of the unknown. Unlike anything you have ever seen before.
I loved when you said more on the spook shows, and I was like, oh, I thought I was done.
I figured you had more in the hopper.
Okay, I don't think anybody did much filming. Well, you don't want to film a magic show because then, you know, things get revealed and then that magician's out of work.
Sure.
So as a result, there's been very little preservation of the spook shows. Part of its lasting legacy is the posters, the sort of font and style of which you'll see on t-shirts still, or whenever Rob Zombie goes on tour, his tour t-shirt will resemble the old spook show shirts with all the, like, they just kind of cram in all of the visual, sometimes sexy, sometimes terrifying, sometimes funny kind of like representations of what you'll see at the show.
I'm just sorry, my eyes are wandering to the ones you have framed
on your
wall.
Action takes place in the audience.
Warning, girls should not come alone. You will have nightmares for a week.
1,001 thrills. Their head will be cut off. Gorillas will go into the audience and grab unsuspecting young women.
What does that say? We warn you, this is the most?
This is the most.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's great.
Dig it, Kat.
I dig it.
I knew that you could.
Here in person tonight, White Horse Drive-In Theater, The Trial of the Dead. 18 living nightmares leap from the stage. All lights go out and the monsters are released from their coffins. They may grab you.
So there's also radio ads that have been preserved, and the company Something Weird put out a compilation of them. And at least one will be at a drive-in. And I'm like, what was that like?
Sure.
And thanks to all these articles we've been reading, I now know they, of course, would show the movies on the screen. It would be called a triple feature. So two movies, that's two features. The third feature was the magic act, which would actually be in like two parts on the roof of the snack stand.
People gather around on foot?
I'd say so.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah. And one would be like the gorilla girl or the spider girl. So in any case, it would be like the body of one thing in the head of another.
Oh.
Gorilla girl was a full transformation. The spider girl would be like the body of a spider, the head of a girl. But then there would also be the headless girl. So you could use the same girl twice.
Sure.
Because in one you saw her head and not her body.
Yeah.
In the other you saw her body, not her head.
Wow.
And that would be... Because I used to think, like, do they stand in front of the screen? That's an awful long way to look from your car. It was on the roof of the snack stand.
Wow.
Of course.
Gorilla, real and alive.
Plus, on the screen, two horrific motion pictures.
Dr. Evil and his terrors of the unknown.
Plus, two horrific pictures.
from there, he then became a TV horror host. And although the horror hosts tended to take their cues from the spook show magicians when things were first getting going, the old late night TV horror hosts, I haven't heard of many that actually were both. But Dr. Evil would. He'd tape a bunch and they would play in the American South, including North Carolina, Kat.
Yeah.
He was a North Carolina horror host, showing the horror movies late night.
You, I recall, are Dr. Evil,
Dr.
right?
Evil,
this
yeah.
is the House of Evil?
Yes, and welcome to the House of Evil.
May I sit down?
Please have a seat.
Oh, good. Thank you. I was hoping that this Halloween we wouldn't have to make a return visit here, but obviously we had to. Is that
well,
correct?
While you're here, let's use our master control crystal ball to look at some of your features.
Does that work?
Oh, yes.
Sure. Okay, it's going to be a good show tonight. So, Dr. Evil, let's get it rolling.
But, you know, you can't stay on the road forever. Plus, television kind of knocked out the audience for a lot of the old spook shows. So his last performance was on New Year's Eve, 1977. By which time, the company was making its own money, growing all the time, and specializing, of course, in gorilla outfits. Kat, around what year was he contacted for a gorilla outfit from one particular customer?
1972.
Okay.
So in 1972, Roger Patterson wanted a gorilla suit made by Philip Morris.
Your cryptozoologist may know that name.
Yes. So Philip sent it. This is according to him. He says he wanted it. I sent it to him. Then the next thing I knew, the Patterson-Gimlin film came out. Actually, this was according to Scott, Philip's son. So I'm sure the story was told many, many times. But I have noted that this was an interview with Scott where he said this.
There's print interviews with Philip himself.
For sure. I'm just saying this was the way Scott told it.
Okay.
If you're listening to this, I have no doubt that 99.9% of you, if not 100, have seen the Patterson-Gimlin film. We've all seen it.
Which is?
It's the film of Bigfoot. It's the most famous, purportedly real footage we have of a Sasquatch. He's walking, you know, the camera's kind of shaky, and you see this big gorilla man thing.
Bit of a gorilla, bit of a Neanderthal.
Yeah. And so according to Philip Morris of Morris Costumes, it's one of his suits, you know? I don't know what to think about that.
I'm sure there's plenty of people on, let's just say the internet, who would have plenty of reasons why it couldn't be.
Sure.
Because there's a lot of theories out there.
Right.
On Bigfoot. There's people who've put a lot of themselves into the existence of Bigfoot.
And analyzed that video and gone to that site and looked for tracks and said they found tracks and then poured stuff into a track and then I have the print of the foot. You know, like, it seems too simple to be true that it's like, yeah, he called me up and was like, I want that costume. And then next thing I knew, this video came out. You connect the dots. And it's like, could it be that simple? But, you know.
I mean, when crop circles got explained, it was like, what I did was I took this piece of cardboard here and I did this with the crops. Easy peasy.
Right.
Or when, like, the Loch Ness picture got explained as being like, that's a toy boat.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it couldn't be. People have been looking for that monster for years.
Right.
Can't be a toy boat. And also, by the way, you just want Bigfoot to be out there somewhere.
Maybe
you don't
you
want
do.
Some guy.
I used to be really scared of Bigfoot as a kid.
Okay. Well, now you can just be afraid of quicksand.
I was never afraid of quicksand. I know that's a very common experience. I never thought I would run into it in real life. So why am I going to be afraid of it?
More than I'd run into Bigfoot.
I don't know. I grew up near woods.
Okay.
Not big enough woods for Bigfoot to be in, but I didn't know that as a kid. I didn't know we weren't remote enough. All I knew was it got dark and the trees were there and I wouldn't want to walk into those trees at night because Bigfoot's probably out there.
Bigfoot behind every tree.
Yeah.
Out of the great Northwest comes the legendary Bigfoot.
It's weird that just one of his costume rentals is also one of his biggest claims to fame.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to Google or read an article, anything about Philip Morris or the Morris Costume Company, without it including the Bigfoot connection.
It's so charming.
Oh, hello. I'm Philip Morris, and welcome to Morris Costumes and Dr. Evil's Haunted Houses on this brisk, cool October evening. I'd like to show you our haunted house. Come on with me, if you would, please.
Did I mention that Philip Morris is no longer with us?
I don't think you did.
He's no longer with us. But he made it to a good ripe age, and there's videos of him hosting on the premises of his large costume company, which has like a showroom, I'm sure, a haunted house that they would make every year.
Yep.
Part of it was at least asylum-themed, which made me happy because one of Dr. Evil's gimmicks, one of Philip Morris's gimmicks as Dr. Evil would be like, an asylum of horrors. So that they kept it an asylum.
Yeah.
And Dr. Evil's asylum, I believe, was just kind of heartwarming to me.
Sure.
Even though his touring days and his spook show days are behind him.
Yeah.
It then got that incarnation.
Yeah.
In his life.
Well, and I really love, for me, is it's not even that just Philip Morris was into this sort of thing. His wife was a full part of these ghost shows, these spook shows, mm-hmm. of building the costume business. And there's a wonderful profile piece on her you can find on the internet.
I watched that first. Yeah. Well, you sent it to me.
So I thought, aha, we could start a costume shop at home. And, of course, it was only two racks of costumes. And the odd thing was, it was the end of September that we got the ad in the phone book. And Halloween was around the corner. We rented every single costume we had. It was phenomenal. We were just blown away. It was like, oh, my, this is a business.
She's older and she's a widow, but like...
She was like 85 when that was made.
I wouldn't have guessed that she was 85 from that video. She seems so spry and like,
you know. We should hope to be that spry and still loving of spooky things.
And that's exactly my point, is there's a shot of her like playing with this skeleton thing and laughing and delighting in it. And you can tell that the son, who was obviously raised with some kind of interesting parents, let's just say, he said that he went off and did some other stuff and then came back to the family business.
I was thinking I like animals. Maybe I'd be a vet.
An evil vet?
He seems like he really has a passion for Halloween and spooky stuff too. And I just love that in an episode that I think you were a little worried could be cynical about capitalism.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. But at the outset, you were concerned to keep this topic within the guardrails of Boys and Ghouls tone, right? Which is charming.
You mean our
warm
brand.
Warm and engaging. Yes. And, you know, you were like, let's just not be cynical about money grabs, right? And what a beautiful example the Morris family is and Morris Costumes is of, like, this very American dream that, you know, it's this textbook thing of, like, you're passionate about a thing and you make your fortune
off of it. They started working at home and look at them now.
And it's spooky stuff as a bonus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they made their fortune on frights. And the Halloween season.
If somebody had said... when we first started, this is how big you're going to grow, and I could envision it, I think most people would have said, oh, I'm not capable of that. But it's like raising a child. You grow with that child, and you just evolve with it.
Some of their costume successes at that company have included the Batman, besides, of course, their run of gorillas.
Yeah,
but I
haven't noted that they owned the license for Batman.
Yep, the Tim Burton Batmans in particular, as well as the Beavis and Butthead masks.
Yes.
Which were a big seller for them.
I got so excited when I saw that.
Which says to me that, like, this guy, Philip Morris specifically, was a part of two different now dead horror traditions, for the most part. The Spook Show, which every now and then someone will, like, do a revival on. But not in any really major way. And the horror host. Sure, we've still got Elvira and Joe Bob Briggs is as big as ever. And Sven Gulli's on Saturday nights on MeTV. But largely the...
the casual viewer these days is not stumbling upon seeing a horror host like they would have in the heyday, right? If they were watching TV late.
Yeah, exactly. And they're not like the local celebrities they used to be. They've become something else. And they're largely online. Done by passionate people who are
making... Listen to our episode on spook shows. I mean...
Yeah, listen to our episode on horror hosts and know that right now it's more just like the passionate people that are doing it for low to no money that are really doing it right now. So anyways, Philip Morris was a part of two spooky traditions that kind of died on him, but he kept going with what was there and what was popular. He moved on to costumes and professional haunted houses and Beavis and Butthead. He wasn't sitting around going like, no, creepy spiders. Although he did like innovate... spider web?
Yeah, I was reading that they were the first people to commercially make spider webs for people to use as decorations.
In particular, I mean, there's always been like gauze you can stretch out, but I think there's the yard one, like the big one. I think that's him, that's them.
That's crazy.
But, I almost stepped on my own point. To my own point, he's not going like, no, a skeleton with red eyes, that's all you need for Halloween. All you need is a few bats and you're there. And what happened to gorillas? Why don't people wear gorillas anymore? Because they're hot as hell.
Yeah.
You just sweat into that chest piece. But here's a guy rooted in great tradition who was perfectly able to move forward with the times.
Yep.
And, you know, Halloween doesn't look like it did even 20 years ago, really. And certainly not 50 years ago. And my takeaway from that is just get out there and enjoy the Halloween you're given. No, that's not it.
I think the takeaway maybe is, you know, you can look at, we could view this through a couple lenses. The first could be, oh man, the corporations are pushing back the start date of the Halloween season so much because they just want to make more money, which is true.
By pushing back the start, you mean earlier and earlier.
To earlier, yeah.
Yeah.
But also, what a delight it is that each and every year of our lives, we get to go to Spirit Halloween and see what new, crazy, cool animatronic is there. There's new innovations in candy and cookies and all the different kinds of foods and products, toys, costumes. Like, there are new delights to behold. You know,
there's announcements,
in part because
drops
of capitalism.
Yeah.
But, you know, we live in a very merchandise-focused culture, and we have for the past several decades. And, like, look, you can be cynical about that, but also there's a part of it that's, like, people love to buy little treats and cool little things and collect...
Or big things.
Yeah. Let's just say there's never been a better time to be alive when it comes to the opportunity to do that.
I guess we're saying the joy of consumerism is still joy.
It can be.
It can, okay.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, if you got money burning a hole in your pocket, support your local home haunt and buy from that artist on Etsy who's making things by hand.
Yeah, it's not all corporations.
You can contribute to the Halloween industry in a whole lot of different ways. And look, they'll all be happy to take your money.
We really didn't think of an ending when we started this.
I never do. I know you probably do.
I always like a good conclusion.
Yeah.
Hey, folks, thanks for seeing us all the way to the end of this episode. If you want to learn more about the Philip Morris Company, I got the DrEvil.info at Facebook and DrEvil.info on Instagram.
I get the feeling that they're working on like a documentary. He's posting these clips. That's my prediction.
Well, he's certainly working on a website. You go to the website and it's more of like a coming soon.
Right. And my feeling isn't that more things on the website is coming soon. My feeling is they're trying to tease that they're working on something bigger. That's my theory. We'll see if it pans out.
Let's hope, because every time I read an article, then I'll see a new one. I'm like, ooh, more.
Yeah.
And it'll focus on like different aspects of this storied life and career and legacy of Philip Morris of North Carolina. All right, Kat. It's Halloween.
It's Halloween, our favorite time of year.
And we've made it through another podcast. And thank you, folks, for making it all the way to the end of this podcast with us, where we covered Halloween stuff.
If this is your first episode of Boys and Ghouls, welcome. We have several other Halloween episodes to color your season with fall and Halloween fun. We talk about Halloween TV specials and the history of Halloween and a bunch of other things. So if you are interested in that, there's some fun stuff waiting for you.
There's more out there for you.
Yep.
In the meantime, find us on social media. We're on Instagram, Boys and Ghouls Podcast. Just Boys and Ghouls, most places you look.
IMDb. We are. And I'm working on adding all the seasons, but we now exist on IMDb, which is very cool.
If you want to know just how many episodes we've got in the order they actually came out, that's where you're going to have to look. Well, Kat, any parting advice for our listeners?
Beware the Halloween moon.
anymore.
Oh, that's too bad. I was hoping to get in on the excitement.
Who said that?
Allow me to introduce myself. I'm the Invisible Man.
And now we return to our graves, the old and the new, and you may join us soon.